being silenced for my beliefs. This isn't a battle that anybody can win. I was a little hesitant to be stepping into the line of fire, I'll be honest.
From the moment I gave my answer on stage that night, I have had no support from the Miss California organization. This is all happening because of the stance that I took for traditional marriage.
Were the jokes in questionable taste? Of course they were. Would I do anything to advocate or contribute to underage sexual abuse or misconduct? Absolutely not. Not in 1,000 years. Look at me.
It took a couple of days for him to think of that excuse that, no, he wasn't talking about my daughter who was there with me at the game, the 14-year-old. He was talking about some other daughter.
I often wonder whether we're doing away with Father's Day coming up here pretty soon, whether we're doing away with the need for the institution or the role or whatever you want to call it at all. At least society seems to be doing so. Everyone has a father. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it's a biological fact. Whether you were conceived in a test tube, adopted, whatever it may be, you have a father. But do you need one? With gay marriage, with gay adoption, with in vitro fertilization, with single mothers? Many would say, not really. We're going to talk about the importance of fatherhood. I mean, look where we've come. It was, what, 20 years ago, a little bit less than 20 years ago, Bill Cosby wrote that famous book, Fatherhood, extolling his role and the role of fathers in general, and it was a bestseller. And now people are wondering whether we even really need one around. It's Monday, June the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Monday afternoon. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MY-IE. 877-623-6943, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll spend the first half hour talking about fatherhood with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. Then, later in the show, we'll talk to Greg Kokel about responsible science and embryonic stem cell research. Jennifer Roback Morse is a founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's authored the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Are fathers kind of the ultimate vestigial organ in American society, like our appendix? Everybody's got one, but you don't really need one?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people in society that would like you to believe that. But as a matter of fact, the evidence has never been clearer that people really do need a father. I mean, we've done so much experimenting on in our society the last 40 years. We now know that kids without fathers have poorer life chances in just about every area you can name. And so the idea that you can replace a father with a check from the government, or that you can replace a father with another mother, or even replace a father with a stepfather. Stepfathers don't act like bio fathers, you know. So we've done these experiments, and we've pretty much proven that it's that you do need a dad. We do need fathers. So the evidence is in, and the ideological forces are getting stronger and stronger, saying it's all unnecessary. But the fact is, we do need our dads.
You seem to have inadvertently acted as a prophetess with regard to at least the attempt to do away with the sense of the need for a father. How long ago was it that you predicted perhaps the marginalization of the role of father?
Oh, I guess it's been a couple of years ago where I first started to see that that the move for same-sex marriage was, in fact, a move that would push fathers further out of the family. Because the same-sex marriage is something that says mothers and fathers are interchangeable. And I don't think that saying moms and dads are interchangeable is something that will affect moms and dads exactly the same. I mean, everybody knows kids need moms. And so if you say they're interchangeable, it's dads who are going to drop out of the picture. And so we've seen evidence of that over the last 18 months or 2 years. That, you know, for example, in the UK, they came up with a they used to have in the UK a rule, a very small rule, but it was a rule nonetheless, a sort of, I guess you could say it was for show a lot. But anyway, if you were an unmarried woman and you were going to present yourself for in vitro fertilization, you were asked to show that your child's need for a father figure would somehow be met. So you had to say, you know, I have an uncle, or, you know, my father will be involved, or whatever. But it was kind of a perfunctory requirement, but it did convey the clear message that if you're an unmarried woman, we would like to see, before we give you this expensive technological assistance here, that we would like to see some evidence that the kid will have a dad. Well, just in the last 18 months, they did away with that requirement. And the reason they gave was, we don't want the lesbian couples to feel bad. So, when I read that, I felt very, very sad, but I also felt vindicated, you know, that this is exactly the sort of thing I feared would happen.
You mentioned before the fact that the mother and the father are considered to be interchangeable. Why is it the father that is marginalized when that attempt is made?
Well, you know, Todd, whenever a child is born, there's always a mother somewhere close by, you know. I mean, that's just kind of the biology of the thing. And so really the complicated social problem always is to attach the father to the child. And so what marriage is supposed to do is to attach fathers to children, and fathers and mothers to each other, so that they have a common, so they have some bond to help them in this common project of raising the child. That's what marriage is supposed to do, and that's the problem it's supposed to solve in all societies, all times and places. And so weakening, every time you weaken marriage, you weaken that bond. So I think that's the general point of what's happening to us here.
What role has kind of fourth wave radical feminism played?
Now, Todd, you got me there, because I can't keep track of all the waves of feminism, but I think there's no doubt.
We'll just go with radical feminism.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there is a variety of feminism, call it what you will, but that the feminist movement is gravely culpable in this area, okay? I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that, because some of them teach that men are a problem in the household. If there's a problem in the family, it's probably the father's fault. That men are unnecessary, that men are dangerous, that marriage itself is a trap. All without realizing that what they're doing is they're not pushing women away from becoming mothers. They're pushing women into becoming either cohabiting mothers or single mothers, which are much more hazardous situations for women and their children. So, the feminist movement is gravely culpable. And more than that, in many states, the feminist ideology has become built into the court system, so that the presumption of guilt and so on, and the presumption, all the presumptions are colored by feminist presuppositions. And so a lot of times fathers don't do very well in courts, and fathers are expected to pay, but they're not necessarily allowed to participate, and they're not necessarily allowed to have the visitation rights that they're entitled to. And so in most states, child support obligations are enforced much more strenuously than visitation rights are enforced. And so what that means is that the state is basically saying, Dad, your role is to pay money, but your need and your desire and your child's need for a relationship with you, that we're not going to take as seriously, you know. So that's part of feminism, too. I feel quite confident in saying that.
So is this a marginalization not of just fathers in particular, but men in general?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And this particular thing, Todd, this is why the Ruth Institute has proposed its reconciliation proposal for Father's Day, because we know that a lot of men have been kept out of their kids' lives. It's not just that fathers are all deadbeats and they've all run away from their families. Sometimes that happens, no doubt about it. But it's also the case that some fathers are pushed out of the home and some fathers are kept out of the home. And even though they're making their child support payments, you know, the moms say bad things about him and say, you know, you don't want to see him and he really hates you and he doesn't care about you, and he sends a birthday card and the mom throws it away. And, you know, there are families where it's not all the dad's fault. And so we want to encourage people to go to our website and look at the Father's Day page that we've created there, because we've created some letters that adult children can use to try to connect again with their fathers if they think that something like this might have been going on. We've got sample letters for the fathers themselves to use to reach out to kids that maybe they've been estranged from due to the court and the mother's activities. And so we would just really invite people who have any form of estrangement to go take a look at the Father's Day Project at the RuthInstitute.org and use these sample letters to reach out to the fathers in your life. Reach out to children that you haven't heard from or seen in a long time and try to create some reconciliation and healing, because we believe that that has to be good for everybody. If it can be made to happen, that's definitely worth the effort.
With about 30 seconds here before we take a break, is this self-fulfilling prophecy in society that if we marginalize fathers, fathers themselves are not going to step up to the plate and be more responsible individually?
Well, it makes it a lot harder. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we tell fathers they're unimportant. They get the idea they're unimportant, and so they act like they act like what they do doesn't matter. Well, the tragedy of that is that by removing themselves from their kids' life, they don't have the opportunity to grow up and become bigger and better men. Fatherhood offers that to men, and so, you know, ironically, all the complaints that women have had against men have been multiplied and made more dramatic by pushing men out of the family. Because the thing that will help a man to become serious and grow up and become responsible is the actual assuming of responsibility, taking it on, and that's going to make men into more woman-friendly, more child-friendly men, turning men loose and saying, you know, guys, you get to do whatever you want, and by the way, we have plenty of contraception and abortion so that if somebody gets pregnant, you don't have to worry about it. You know, that's not conducive to making men into the kind of guys that women would like to be married with and live with. So there are many, many ironies abound here.
We're talking about the importance of fatherhood. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. You'll find a link to the Ruth Institute's Father's Day Reconciliation Proposal under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. When I look in my phone. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the importance of fatherhood. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. Our in-studio email address on this Monday afternoon, June the 15th, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. So, Jen, let's put it together if we could. If you could just kind of do the math for us. You say that treating same-sex unions like marriage will result in the marginalization of the father and all of the other social ills that you described previously. Do the math for us. How do the two go together?
Well, it works like this. If you say that mothers and fathers are interchangeable, which is what you have to be saying if you're saying that same-sex unions are the same as opposite-sex unions, if you say that, then that means that it's really a coin toss whether you have a mom and a dad or two of each. And so then you have to ask, well, is that going to have the same impact on moms as it's going to have on dads? And I think for a variety of reasons, we can be sure that it's dads who are going to get the message that, yeah, they're not so important. You can do without a dad. Nobody can do without a mom. So it's dads who are going to be pushed aside, who are going to be marginalized. The other thing that you can see is that at the beginning of a child's life, of course, the mother is the most crucial. She's there. She produces the life. She's the one that most kids are most attached to their mom in the first instance, anyhow. But as children mature, the role of the father becomes more prominent and more important. Now, if you're in a stable, lifelong marriage, the partners can feel themselves shift. And I bet you have experienced this in your marriage, Todd, because we've talked about this enough times. You can kind of feel your significance shift around as the child matures, that dad comes into his own as a child enters into their teen years and then into their years where you're launching them out into the world. Well, if you don't have a bond there in the first place, by the time the child gets turns 12, you know, and, you know, all of a sudden they need their dad, it's going to be tough to go look up the sperm donor and say, hey, you know, I need you now. Would you show up here and help me manage this teenage boy who's out of hand? That's just not going to happen. And so the one of the virtues of lifelong married love is that the parents are cooperating with one another over the whole of the child's lifetime, so that as the child's needs change, the parents are there and ready to meet the child's needs, which are different as they age. But if you're trying to do it on your own, or if you're trying to do it with a partner who's of the same sex as you, you don't have that resource to draw on as the child's needs then begin to shift around. And this is, what I think, one of the big problems that nobody's talking about as we shift towards same-sex marriage, Todd.
So this isn't about fathers or fathers losing a place of influence in the family or society per se. This is really, in the end, about the children in the family.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the point that I have consistently tried to make about same-sex marriage is that marriage as an institution exists because of children. Okay, and we come together because of our love for one another. That's true. But we can love one another without having kids, and we can love one another without being married. The reason we have marriage is to bring our love for each other and our love for our children and our production of children, to bring all of those things under a common umbrella for the good of everybody, for the good of the spouses and for the good of the children. And so as marriage becomes an adult-centered institution rather than a child-centered institution, I think it's pretty clear that kids are going to be the losers from that. And moving from an institution of marriage that says, you know, look, our main purpose here is to bring kids up properly, to a view of marriage that says, well, look, our main purpose here is to get insurance benefits and to make us feel good about ourselves. Yeah, you're changing what the institution is fundamentally about. And I think as we move towards Father's Day, it's a good and wholesome thing for us to be thinking through, look, is this really what we mean to say? Is this really what we're trying to do? If we're worried about the dignity of gay men and lesbian women, can't we meet their needs for dignity and respect without undermining what we're trying to accomplish for the stability of children in this society?
Well, it's a good question. Can we do that? I mean, can we do that societally and without saying, yes, mothers and fathers are interchangeable, males and females are interchangeable in the family?
Yeah. What you can't do is you can't have same-sex marriage and do those things. See, and for whatever reason, the gay lobby has decided that the gold standard of human dignity is for them to be allowed to marry on the same terms as everybody else. And you know, I just think that isn't true. I don't think that. Well, I know for sure that people saying that we don't want to change the definition of marriage, it has nothing to do with what they think about gays as individuals. That's not what it's about. It's about marriage. And so I think that there are a number of compromise positions that have been available, but those compromises are being rejected by the gay community. And so, you know, I think from the point of view of the rest of society, it makes perfect sense to be saying, look, we can solve all of the practical problems that same-sex couples have without redefining marriage. I think that's true, and I think in a place like California, that's largely been accomplished. Same-sex couples can do pretty much anything they need to do, and they could, prior to the Supreme Court telling us that we had to have same-sex marriage, they could do everything they needed to do. But it was a same-sex community, the Human Rights Campaign and other groups like that, that decided that that wasn't good enough and that they had to go for marriage. Well, once you start redefining marriage, you're going to redefine it for everybody, and you're going to put incentives into place, you're going to put forces into motion that are going to change many, many things in society, not just what a handful of same-sex couples do. And that's what we would like to be able to talk about, rather than having people just yell at us and tell us that we're bigots or that we don't know what we're talking about or that we're being mean to them or, you know, whatever. We feel like it's really important to be talking about the consequences of same-sex marriage so people can look at this and say, well, this is not really what we meant to do. This is not what we're trying to do. And whatever needs same-sex couples have, we need to deal with it some other way.
Two final questions then, Jen. If the equivalency is made between mother and father, if the father is considered expendable, and if same-sex marriage is considered, or if we treat same-sex unions like marriages, will there be a fundamental shift in other institutions in our society, economic, tax, political, policy, all of those things? Do those things have to follow as a matter of course?
Yeah, they have to follow. And, you know, one of the main ones and one of the first ones you're going to see is in education. They're going to have to start talking about marriage as being a gender-neutral institution. They will not be able to say kids need a mom and dad in school. You know, you just won't be able to say that. For us to have this conversation, kids need a mom and a dad, that's hate speech, you know. So that's going to change. That's going to reverberate in all kinds of ways we can't quite figure out. The other place you'll see it is in custody decisions. If you start creating precedents that are supposed to be general precedents, if they start getting applied to opposite-sex couples, I don't think people have completely thought through what that's going to mean. I mean, see, the point is, Todd, the general point here is that that marriage is supposed to be between a man and a woman, is supposed to be procreative, and that's how kids are supposed to come into being, is through marriage. We have exceptions, such as adoption and in vitro fertilization, and those exceptions allow people who can't have their own kids to still have legal rights to parent. But nobody thinks that adoptive parents are second-class citizens because they have to go file adoption papers in order to get kids. And I think that same-sex couples can solve the problems that they have by remaining exceptions, by saying the principal thing we're doing here is biology is the principal way that we attach kids to parents, and we got some exceptions over here the law allows for. But what the same-sex couples seem to want is to say, we don't like being exceptions. We want to move what is exceptional to being what is normal, because our dignity requires that. And once you start doing that, that's where you really are going to have some very disruptive effects to the whole fabric of society. And we could come on, you know, I should come on and talk to you a little bit about custody cases and how custody law is changing, you know, to accommodate these things, because that's going to be the next big area where you're going to see things where you're going to go, wow, this is really going to be not a good thing if we apply this too far.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. You can read an article that she's written about fatherhood on our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for The New and Improved Disposable Father by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Jennifer, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend the last half hour of today's program on this Monday afternoon talking with Greg Kokel about responsible science and embryonic stem cell research. President Barack Obama has said recently that he believes responsible science can be done. Ethically responsible science can be done with the door more or less wide open to embryonic stem cell research. Of course, a lot of myths have persisted about embryonic stem cell research as it's related to so-called responsible science. Some of those myths are that there's a complete ban and that we need to take the ban away, that there's a difference in what cloning is for. That makes a difference whether or not it's cloning or not. We're going to talk about all of those things for the last half hour of the program. Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason will be our guest. Well, they're indispensable. They're not disposable. They're indispensable. Not only to our children. That's first and foremost, fathers and their children. They're as indispensable as the mother is, but also to society, as indispensable as the mother is to our society, to its institutions, to the way we think about ourselves. So indispensable is fatherhood. When we come back, we'll talk about embryonic stem cell research and responsible science.
Can't beat the way an old boat rides. Just a little lake across the Alabama line, but I was king of the ocean when daddy let me